This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
College holds a mythic place in American culture. But there are stories you won't hear on the campus tours.
The higher-ups are concerned about one thing, and that is avoiding scandal.
I'm Margot Gray. On the new podcast, Campus Files, we cover everything from rigged admissions to the drama of Greek life and student protests. Listen to and follow Campus Files, an Odyssey original podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Sal Capaccio, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. It's Paul Hamilton.
That's what they called me in college, was the bone.
He has the facts to back up his opinions.
People ask me, well, how are the Sabres going to win tonight? I don't have a clue.
On WGR, Sports Radio 550.
Keeping the train rolling here on a Wednesday. Good morning to you. Welcome back to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Sal Capaccio. And last night, my wife and I decided, because after Syracuse lost to Miami, which was ridiculous, I'm like, you know what? I want to watch this Saturday Night Live thing. Have you, Josh, seen the new SNL 50 stuff that's going on?
I've been seeing bits of it on social media, but never anything like, you know, the whole episodes or anything like that.
Okay, so there's all these documentaries. One of them's like, it's like 2.5 hours long, but most of it's about like the music. So turn it on. Oh my God, it was amazing. And I still like have a bunch left to watch. I'm thinking about halfway through at least. But wow, unbelievable. In the very beginning, I'm just letting everybody know, go watch the beginning, just how they put all these different, like it's a collective of music and together, and it's like being at a club and just the beat keeps going on. It's unbelievable and it's really cool, and it really brought me back to a cool time watching Saturday Night Live. Very cool. I can't wait to watch the rest of it, and there's a whole other bunch of documentaries and parts of this whole thing going on with SNL 50. Paul Hamilton joins me on the Western Hotline right now. Were you a Saturday Night Live guy? Have you been your whole life?
Oh, yeah. I don't know if it's the same thing you're watching. They had a 3-hour special on all the music.
I'm sure it is.
I saw it when it was on. Yeah. Yeah, that was awesome.
And then
I was thinking, some I'm going to fast forward through and everything, and I didn't. You know, I watched the whole thing.
It was great, and they go through all the different musical acts, how they started, what they meant, the different genres, like the impact that the musical acts had back in the time period in the 70s and the 80s. And then, of course, some of the funniest ones, the best parts were the skits, right? And the music that went with the skits. Mm-hmm. And how those were created, and Justin Timberlake, whoever it was, very, very cool. But yeah, I liked it. Have you been a guy that's like kind of like sat down and watched Saturday Night Live when you had a chance? And some of the actors over the years, did you lose touch with it over a certain time period? Was it been a big part of your life?
I've kind of lost touch with it now. I don't watch it all that often now, but yeah, that was a part of my life growing up. As I got a little older, you know. Little up in high school, we weren't usually home on Saturday night, but if you could watch it, you did. And what I didn't realize listening to a lot of the musical acts is what a prestige thing it was to be asked to be on that as a musical guest. I knew it was like a big deal, but I didn't realize it was as big a deal as the top music acts thought it was to be asked to be on there.
Yeah, you're right about that, and I still got some to go on this. Very cool, though. Anyway, if you get a chance, check it out. There's a lot of SNL 50, the anniversary this season this year is going on, so there's a lot of the documentary stuff and about how a lot of this stuff was made. I say there's another one about auditions I need to get to. I really want to watch that as well. In the meantime, it's a good time to watch some of this stuff because there's not a lot of hockey on, but we do have some tonight. It's the Four Nations face-off. It begins tonight in Montreal at the Bell Center. It's going to be Canada against Sweden tonight. All right, Paul, I think the biggest question here from a lot of people and really from me is, what will this look like? Because you have these players in this sport who very much play for pride for their country. It's, I think, soccer and hockey are above any other sport like that. And they're going to really want to win for their country when they put that sweater on. They're also in the middle of a season for their professional NHL team when many of them are trying to win a Stanley Cup. I'm just wondering how this looks, how intense it is, what it's going to look like tonight. What do you think?
I think it's going to be very intense. Now, the things that I've seen, you know, the Canada Cups and a lot of the things I've covered over the years are that iconic goal by Mario Lemieux in Hamilton in 1987 when he's playing a line with Gretzky. Yeah, Gretzky and Lemieux on the same line. Good luck. You know, and I've never been in a building that has gone off like that did when Lemieux scored that goal. You know, and Gretzky got the assist. I have never been in anything like that. It was just crazy what that was like. And then outside the arena, it was like, you know, the most wild World Series party or the most wild Super Bowl or whatever. Fans don't go as wild as they used to, you know, after championships. It was just great hockey, but that was in August. It wasn't. It was before training camp. It wasn't during the season. Now, Mike Ramsey played, I think it might have been called Rendezvous, if I'm not mistaken. It was the NHL All-Stars, and he made that team. He was one of the top six defensemen chosen for that team, and it was like the best of three. And that was during the All-Star break. But so, yeah, I think you're right. It does make it a little different than when you go to training camp early and do it in, you know, before the season starts, as opposed to, you know, doing it here during. But I think it's going to be great. I mean, Connor McDavid and Sidney Crosby are on the same team. You know, it's just mind-blowing. And then you got Makar on defense, you know, for Team Canada. You know, Nate MacKinnon, Sam Reinhart, Mitch Marner. I mean, just it's crazy. I'm looking at the lineup. The only thing Canada doesn't have is goaltending. And it may kill them, because they definitely have the best team, I think, as far as forwards and defense. But they have, I think, probably the worst goaltending.
What about the United States? Where do you see they are strong, and where do you think they lack a little bit, if anywhere?
Well, the United States, I think, is strong, yes, without question. The thing with them is, you know, they do have much better goaltending, I think, without question. You know, you got Jack Eichel. Austin Matthews was their captain. I mean, to have them on the same team down the middle is phenomenal. But I think the biggest thing that maybe could put them ahead of Canada is, you know, you got Connor Hellebuyck in goal. You basically have the best goaltender in the National Hockey League, you know, for Team USA, which I think, does that put them ahead of Canada? I think that's the question. You know, Team USA certainly can put a great hockey team on the ice, but I don't think they quite have the stars that Canada has. I mean, you have both the Chooks, you have Matthews, you have a guy like Gensel who scores a lot of goals, but then, you know, and Larkin's a good player. But you also have guys like Nelson and Trocheck and JT Miller, and not that they're not good players on defense. You know, Slavin's a good defenseman. There's no question. But, you know, the defense that Team USA puts out can't compare to the defense that Team Canada does. But when you have Hellebuyck and Ottinger on goal, compared to what Canada has, which is Binnington of the St. Louis Blues. Aiden Hill has won a Stanley. They both have won Stanley Cups. I will give them that. But I would take Hellebuyck over either one of those guys any day.
Canada-Sweden tonight at 8 p.m. United States-Finland tomorrow night at 8 p.m. And then on Saturday, it really gets real. Finland-Sweden at 1. United States and Canada play at 8 p.m. Saturday night. That's going to be really fun as they wrap up the first part all at the Bell Center in Montreal. Speaking of Sweden, obviously that's where you see, Rasmus Dahlin playing for the Buffalo Sabres. He'll be on a pretty stacked blue line, I think. You look at the defense corps for Sweden. Rasmus Andersson, Brodin, Dahlin, Ekholm. I mean, Victor Hedman, Erik Karlsson. This might be the best blue line team.
Well, what I saw is that Darlene on the third pair, whether that winds up being that way, I don't know, with Anderson. Carlson, to me, he's a phenomenal offensive defenseman. Maybe not as much now. He's 34 years old as he used to be. And he is a god-awful defensive defenseman. Just awful. He's on their second pair with Ekholm. And as much as I don't think Darlene has reached his potential, he's still very good in the National Hockey League as an all-star. I don't think Erik Karlsson can hold Darlene's jockstrap as an overall defenseman, just as an overall guy. I'll take Rasmus Darlene defending over Karlsson any day of the week. I would take Rasmus Darlene injured over Karlsson defending. So it's interesting, and Darlene is also not on either power play unit, but you know that kind of checks out because you know at a lot of the time this year, not all the time, but a lot of the time, the Sabres power play has struggled, especially last year, and he's been a big part of that. But he right now is not on Sweden's power play.
For Finland, Henri Jokiharju will be playing for the Buffalo Sabres. He was added as an injury replacement, but he's on the team. And then Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen, is he going to be the main starter for this team? They also have Lankinen and Saros.
Saros is the starter. Yeah, he'll back up Saros, which is right. Even if Luukkonen was playing as well as he did last year, I think Saros is still the number one goaltender in Finland. Whether he gets a game or not, you know, being such a short tournament, I'm not sure that he will unless there's an injury. But just that's an honor for him because Finland's always been kind of a big thing for goaltenders. And for him to be able to make that team and be on that team, I think, is a good honor for him. The thing about Finland is there's not that many Finnish defensemen in the National Hockey League.
No.
And I think three of them had to get out because of injury, which put Jokiharju in there. So they're really hurting on the blue line as far as that goes. But, again, Saros can get hot. He's quite capable of getting hot. And when he is, he's tough to beat.
Paul Hamilton on the West Hur hotline. Paul, what's been any sort of reaction of Sabres who didn't make it, like Tage Thompson specifically or anybody else?
He was very disappointed, and I don't blame him. I mean, when the team was picked, he had 15 goals. Cole Caulfield had 17. Neither one of them were picked for the team, which I thought, really? Come on. And I know you have to pick a team. You know, you can't just have goal scorers and that type of thing. But really, you're going to take Nelson and Trocheck over Tage Thompson and Caulfield? Come on. You know, I just those are the two that I just shook my head and said, come on, what are you guys doing? And, but, you know, in Trocheck's case, Chris Drury is part of the management team that picked this team. He got Boldy from Minnesota, part of the management that picked this team, Team USA's GM. So Faber, he's Minnesota too, but Faber's a very good defenseman. I don't think that's a bad choice for defense. But when we're talking about, you know, a guy like Tage Thompson and Caulfield, and you don't take the top two goal scorers from Team USA, I just kind of shook my head. Now Matthews has been hurt for most of the year, so he's not up there in the top goal scorers because of injury. And of course, the Tkachuks and Eichel. Connor's got 30 goals. He's always disrespected. Nobody wants to talk about Connor, but he always, by the end, has scored goals. And I'll give you a quick example. I'm in a goal-scoring pool. Connor scores goals every single year. He was the 18th overall pick, and he's got 30. I mean, it's just like nobody wants this guy, but all he does is score goals. You know, and now he's going to play with Eichel and Tkachuk to start with, or at least he did in practice. And that's where he belongs. At least Team USA values him.
All right, Paul, let's turn our attention back to, you know, the games in the league. And the league trade deadline is March 7th. I mean, from your sense, are the Sabres in a mode to just say, look, we're not going to make it again, so we're going to sell off some parts here and see what we can do with some draft picks? Do you think there's a big move coming that they could still be shopping someone? Is it possible that they still think that they could climb back in this thing and look to add a piece?
No, but I'd be looking for the middle stat for Bo Byram trade, which happened around March time. It's always been, it's hard to make hockey trades at the trade deadline, but they've already been made. Some trades have already been made. That's what I think the same. They don't need draft picks. They don't need any of that stuff. That I don't see there's any point in trading Zucker, who's going to be an unrestricted free agent, or Greenway. Those are the types of players they need. They need more of guys like that, veteran guys who can play and can lead. They don't need to subtract them for draft picks. Kevin Adams was on our station saying he's already contacted the agents of Zucker to try to maybe get a deal done before the trade deadline. And I think that's the right thing to do. You know, get this guy signed to a two-year contract. I wouldn't give him too much more than that. I mean, he is getting up there in years. Mm-hmm. But I think it's reasonable to maybe offer him a good two-year contract and keep him around, because I think, you know, he's been an excellent signing for the Sabres. Greenway, one of the best penalty killers in the NHL. He's one of the few physical forwards that you have. I have never seen a player on the Sabres that makes maybe Tuck. It's semi-similar, but Greenway that makes teams turn the puck over. It's almost like he knows where the guy's going to go with the puck before they do, and it creates scoring opportunities for his line mates. So he would be another one that I would be trying to sign, not trade, at the trade deadline.
I'm taking a look at the UFAs here. It really is Greenway, Zucker. Who am I listening here? Yoki Haru. Dennis Gilbert.
I think he might be gone. He hasn't played a lot. He's been benched somewhat, and I don't think he'd be unhappy. He has not asked for a trade that I know of, at least. It has right. not come out publicly, but I don't think he would be too disappointed either if he moved on. I think the Sabres offering him a one-year contract kind of told him where he is in the organization. So that might be a deal that you could see for a draft pick or whatever at the trade deadline.
What about I had something in front of my mind and injuries, Paul. Greenway, where he is and anybody else that we're monitoring here over this week.
He should be back for the first game against the Rangers. Lindy Ruff said, you know what? They put him on a program with the doctors and everything that targeted that game. He said, if we really needed this game coming up, like let's say it was a playoff game or something like that, he could have played in Nashville probably, but they didn't want to go against the protocols that were being suggested there just to throw him into one game early. They said, let's keep doing with the program that they had decided to do. He's been going hard in practice, and then he should be ready for that first game coming back against the Rangers.
I mean, I don't mean to sound flippant when I say this, but don't you kind of need every game right now? And I get it. Like, I get it. If you put him in there, the benefit is you get a hole the other 2 weeks. So I'm totally down with that. But what's the end game?
I think you have to be realistic. It's not like they're not trying to win. They are trying to win. And actually, they had run 5 out of 7. I think you have to be honest with yourself, too. You're not leapfrogging 8 teams and coming back from 12 points down while you are leapfrogging 8 teams. So is it wise to bring him back? And if there's any risk whatsoever, you know, if they were 4 points out, your point is well taken. Wait a minute. We need to get him in there as quickly as we can, because we need every point we can get right now. I think, being realistic there, I probably would have done the same thing if I were them.
Paul, what do you think about the situation in Boston? I know they're chanting fire Sweeney at TD Garden. They're kind of in this spot where they're trying to decide if they should be buyers or sellers. Where do you think they are in their kind of organizational build right now?
Yeah, that was a team when, the beginning of the year when we thought the Sabres would have a chance to make the playoffs that you kind of targeted as well. That's a team you can probably get past, because it just seems like, they had lost Bergeron to retirement and – they still have some good players. McAvoy's a very good player. Marchand's a very good player. Both are going to be in this tournament. Swayman is capable of being a good goaltender. Hasn't been this year since he signed his contract, but he's capable of that. But you got other guys who've kind of stepped in, like a Geeky and others. So they're already kind of making that transition. But I don't think they're going to give up on the playoffs right now. So I don't know how much of a buyer they'll be, but also I they might just be a team that might be willing to stand pat unless something really comes their way that they like.
And then the other two I want to ask you about is the Sabres' next opponent, the Rangers. They come to town next Saturday. Next Saturday when the Sabres get back on the ice against the Rangers. That's a, what, 5:30 p.m. start? I think it's a weird time here. 5:30 p.m. faceoff on Saturday next week. But the Rangers, maybe a bit of a step back, maybe a bit of a disappointment. They make the trade for JT Miller. What do you think about the situation there and where they are right now?
Well, they obviously aren't packing it in by getting JT Miller, you know, the, to acquire that. So they're still going for it. They still, you know, Zibanejad has underperformed this year. Trocheck just is starting to play a little bit better for them. Shesterkin is out with an injury. He's been off and on. There have been times he's been himself. There are times, including against the Sabres, where he hasn't been himself. So I think that's hurt them too. And so, you know, they have guys, even Panarin, you know, he only has 23 goals, and I say only, but for him, that's not a lot. Chris Kreider only has 16 goals. But Chris Kreider is getting up there in age too, you know? And that's a guy that, you know, you look at it and when does it finally cut off? You know, when he's been a 30-goal scorer recently and had some of his better scoring years later in his career, but he's getting long in the tooth too. But I think they've told us by acquiring a 31-year-old JT Miller at $8 million that they're not giving up on it yet.
Paul Hamilton. All right, Paul. Well, enjoy the Four Nations face off, and then what? Are there restrictions on the? You know how they do the whole thing where, remember they had the off days a few weeks, like a month ago, and then the Blackhawks wait to fly at midnight or something to come to Buffalo. Is that the same thing that happens after this sort of thing?
No, you know what I mean? Like, no, this is different.
How does this work?
This is just business as usual. There's no roster freeze.
Okay.
They're not coming out of the Christmas break. That was the Christmas break you were talking about.
That was.
Right. And the tournament will be over, too. I mean, the Sabres actually be practicing before the tournament. Their first practice is Tuesday, the 18th.
Okay.
And then they play on Saturday. But some of the guys, if you make it to the finals, they still won't be available to their teams yet. But teams at least can get players back and get them practicing again and that type of thing. But, no, they haven't frozen rosters or have any restrictions. It's, you know, you can practice, I think, at 2 o'clock on Tuesday, and Lindy Ruff will, and I'm sure other teams will, and they'll start getting ready for the rest of the season.
Well, good information. I appreciate that. Thanks a lot, Paul. We appreciate it.
Yeah, I got Sal to cook for me yesterday.
Yeah, I know. Well, hey, it's really a Yana Capaccio creation, but I helped a little bit with some of the things inside the potatoes. Did you like the potato soup she made?
I did. I liked it. Yeah. There were some really good soups there. It's funny because, you know, I don't get to the station all that often, but when they said they were going to have a soup thing,
yeah,
I'm coming. I'm in.
I get it.
Soup and chili. And you had to take the little cups, though. You can't be filling up on one because we're judging, so you have to be able to taste them all. I believe a chicken wing soup was the winner. But there was some really good stuff there. I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, Christine and our account exec, the chicken wing soup she made was terrific. And Paul, I'm the same way as you, which is you want me to come in, tell me you're feeding me, and then I'll come in. Then I'll be at studio. I'll leave Studio Capaccio to go to Odyssey. Thanks a lot.
I've lost a lot of weight lately, so I don't eat anywhere near as much as I used to. But yeah, and then I got a little tub of soup to take home, so I had it for dinner too.
Nice. You got it, buddy. All right. Have a great rest of your week.
Take care.
All right. You got it. Paul's appearance here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show is brought to you by Equitable Advisors. Planning for your future is about more than just money. Let Equitable be your guide by Relax Honda. Honda, Relax, we got this. Okay, we'll take a timeout. When we come back, I've teased it. I've talked about it. I have in my hand list. Hear that paper? I want to unveil it. My 1 through 7 best 1, worst 7 NFL head coaching hires based on what the team actually needed. Doesn't mean they'll be the most successful or the least successful, but what did you need, and did you get what you needed? 1 through 7, we come back here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. So we've had 7 NFL head coaches hired this year. All teams now have a head coach. There's no more vacancies. That was the final one was filled yesterday with the Saints hiring of Kellen Moore. So the teams, in whatever order I am listed here, I'll just read the teams. I'm going to here. If you go to Wikipedia and like look at all the NFL head coaches and you sort by year hired, here's the order they're listed that were this year. Bears just hired Ben Johnson. Dallas Cowboys with Brian Schottenheimer. Jacksonville Jaguars with Liam Cohen. Las Vegas Raiders Pete Carroll. New England Patriots Mike Vrabel. New Orleans Saints Kellen Moore. And oh, where's Aaron Glenn? How come they don't have Aaron Glenn on here? They missed this? Well, what are they for the Jets here? This is kind of funny. I'm actually going through the... you go to Wikipedia. Josh, you go to Wikipedia and you sort by a year hired. I don't even think... Who do they have listed? Do they even have a Jets coach listed here? Let me see. It's kind of funny. They're HJ. I'm going to go through the alphabetical order. It does say 2025, but I just don't see him listed on there. Oh, they put it in the wrong little column there. That's why. It says coach 225. It does not say. It's so funny. Look at the Jets. You can never do anything right with the Jets, right? Go to Wikipedia. If you type in NFL head coaches and go to the Wikipedia page, for New York Jets, they actually put it in the wrong box. Instead of coach Aaron Glenn hired 2025, it says coach 2025. Like it's the person's name is 2025. Pretty funny, actually. That's why I was a little screwed up. Let me give you, though, the point is my rankings 1 through 7 on these teams and how well they did hiring the head coach for what they basically needed. I want to reiterate, this does not mean or my prediction of how well and or terrible any of these coaches will do. They may have hit a home run for what they needed, but it doesn't matter because of other circumstances. The coach just does not do well. They may have not really got something they needed, but then all of a sudden the coach does great. Then obviously I think I'm probably wrong in that regard. Let's start at the top. I have the New England Patriots hiring Mike Vrabel as number one. You know why? The Patriots just needed a leader of an organization and a guy who knows how to win in the National Football League. Mike Vrabel knows how to win in the NFL. He has not had great seasons necessarily in the NFL as a head coach with the Tennessee Titans, but he's had good seasons. In fact, remember, he even beat the New England Patriots in the playoffs. He's also a part of their organization, their culture, the Patriot way. Whatever you think about that or it means, he will bring a much, much needed type of stability to that position after going with Gerard Mayo for a year. Mike Vrabel to the New England Patriots always made the most sense. It's what they should have done, quite frankly, last year, but because they had given Gerard Mayo in his contract and said he is the successor to Bill Belichick, they went that direction. But once Mike Vrabel was available, it just made the most sense that Mike Vrabel should be the head coach of the New England Patriots. That's what they needed. They needed a leader of their organization, someone to start leading them again in this new era post-Bill Belichick. They got it in Mike Vrabel, so that's number one. Number two, you know what the Chicago Bears needed? An exciting offensive mind. And they got one in Ben Johnson. Now, I don't know. I have my reservations and thoughts about whether or not Ben Johnson's going to be a great leader, CEO type of coach. I don't know. You could be a great play caller. You could be a great designer of offense. You could be a great position coach. You could be a great coordinator. It really doesn't always translate to being a great head coach. I don't know. But you know what they needed? They needed to get away from what they just had, which just was a seemed like kind of a more boring defensive personality. Matt Eberflus, a lot of, you know, Matt Nagy didn't have the greatest personality. This is a guy, bring some pizzazz. They need that. And oh, by the way, I even went all this time without mentioning they have Caleb Williams, who can be really good in this league, I think. I don't know how good he's going to be. Maybe he never reaches the status a lot of people thought he would. Number one overall pick, whatever. But they needed a guy like Ben Johnson. They needed a young, fresh, an exciting offensive mind. And they got one in Ben Johnson. So I'm going to put the Bears at number two. At number three, I debated this. I went back and forth on a few of these, okay? But I ultimately settled on the Las Vegas Raiders and what they needed by hiring Pete Carroll as their head coach. You know why? I think at the end of the day, now, Pete Carroll is in his 70s. He is the oldest hired, like, first time, not make first time ever, like, an organization hiring a head coach. He's 73 years old. No team has ever hired a coach to be their new coach at an older age. But I'm going to say this about Pete Carroll. Holy cow, I hope that I look as good as Pete Carroll does when I'm 73. Like, that dude's 21 years older than me. I mean, and he looks 22, and he looks great. And he still has a sharp mind, and I love that. And no part of the sharp mind, though, mostly is from the defensive side of the ball. And look what he did in Seattle. And the reason why I put them number three here, the Vegas Raiders, is because look at the division they're in. Kansas City, Chiefs with Patrick Mahomes. Justin Herbert, obviously, with the Chargers. And then, of course, Bo Nix and what he did with Sean Payton. They don't have a quarterback. They have to figure out the quarterback. So they needed someone who could at least come in, knows defense, knows how to coach defense, and actually has won. He's a Super Bowl winning coach. I think they got what they needed here. I don't love the fact that you're hiring a 73-year-old coach, but if you're going to hire a 73-year-old coach, make it a guy like Pete Carroll, who looks really good for his age and looks like he can still run out there and do everything on a daily basis and a daily grind. So I'm going to give the Las Vegas Raiders number three here with what they got in Pete Carroll. And I would have done that a few weeks ago, by the way, until I really looked at it and said, you know what? I think they did a good job here. All right, number four. I don't know how it's going to turn out. It's always probably, for them, going to be not good as compared to how great it could be. But the Jets needed a culture changer, and they got one in Aaron Glenn. I mean, you think about the New York Jets and the coaches they've had over the years. Last time the Jets went out and got a culture changer, it was Rex Ryan, believe it or not. And he took them to two straight AFC championship games. There's a thing about changing culture, though. Sometimes that culture just wears off, and it doesn't work in the long run. And that's kind of what happened with Rex Ryan. Happened a little bit in Buffalo in some respect as well. But Aaron Glenn is a culture changer. I love his no-nonsense approach. He's a member of that organization. He played for them. He's gonna be somebody who really, really believes and stands up for what he believes in. The problem Aaron Glenn is going to have is the problem that any New York Jets coach has, no matter how good or bad that coach is, and that's going to be they have an owner that's going to be stepping in the way all the time, right? And Woody Johnson. I don't know if he can overcome that. I don't know if Aaron Glenn's going to be a really good head coach for the Jets. My guess is it's not going to work out in the end, because until I see proof of any coach going to New York and it working out, I'm just going to err on that side. But I will say, for number four here, because I think it can go either way, but the thing I don't like about the Jets, the only thing I don't like about the Jets hire here is I do think that they may have been better served getting a guy who's been a head coach in this league. That is not Aaron Glenn. I think they needed somebody who might have had a little bit more stability, who's been down that road, who know to dealing with the owner, right? Dealing with the GM, a new GM, all these things that go along with the New York media. I think that matters. That's not Aaron Glenn. But they do need a culture changer. So that's why I'm putting him four, which is they didn't get a previous head coach. I think they could have really used one here. But they did get a guy that's going to change the culture, which is good for them. So I'm going to put him right smack dab in the middle here at number four. Then I'm going to go to number five. And honestly, this could be number seven and the worst one for me. But the other two are just so down the road, down the chart, that I didn't do it. I don't even know what the Jacksonville Jaguars need. But they hired Liam Cohen. And he seems like he's a really bright offensive mind. I just don't know. I'm watching the press conferences. I'm thinking about he hasn't been a head coach before. I don't love this hire, but who knows? I like the fact that they have Trevor Lawrence and, you know, they have some good offensive pieces, and they're bringing in a guy who can elevate that offense, which is, I think, what they needed mostly here, right, coming in. A guy that is going to come in from another organization with fresh eyes, fresh perspective. So we'll see. I don't love the hire of Liam Cohen. I just don't know what they needed. It's a mystery to me, because that's kind of an organization that's been wandering in the wilderness for a while, trying to figure it all out, and it hasn't really gone right. Now, number six, what the New Orleans Saints needed was probably something just a little bit different and fresh, and they did okay here. Maybe I could have put Kellen Moore above Liam Cohen, but I'm going to put Kellen Moore at number six here, because I think with the Saints and their cap situation, maybe they needed somebody who could come in and, you know, kind of stabilize that whole environment, make sure that they could still stay competitive. I don't know. Here's the reason why I don't love the Kellen Moore hire, I guess. Here's the biggest reason for New Orleans. I don't know how long he's going to get. Like, maybe you needed a bridge. That's basically the best way I'd say it. Maybe you needed a bridge here more than anything for the New Orleans Saints. That's not Kellen Moore. Kellen Moore is, you're starting fresh from the bottom. You're going to build this thing up. And from that, maybe he's going to be really good. But I think they need more of a bridge than what they got in Kellen Moore here, who you're taking a guy first time head coach. Where are you supporting him with what you're doing here and how you're going to tear this thing down because you have salary cap implications and all of that. So I don't love it necessarily. We'll see where it goes. I could have put him number 5 and then Liam Cohen number 6. And then clearly number 7, the last one on this list. You know what the Dallas Cowboys needed? Respect. You know what they don't get from this hire with Brian Schottenheimer, to be quite honest with you? Respect. And I'm not saying that Brian Schottenheimer can't be a respectable dude. I'm saying, how do you, as the Dallas Cowboys, hire Brian Schottenheimer as your next head coach coming off what you've had over the last several years? This is all a Jerry Jones production. We know that. Brian Schottenheimer does not instantly bring respect and credibility back to the Dallas Cowboys, which is what they needed the most here. They didn't need an X's and O's guy for offense or defense. They needed respectability. They're not getting it with hiring Brian Schottenheimer as their next head coach. I mean, it's a guy that was, look at his titles over the years. He was a coordinator in Dallas, a coaching analyst in Dallas, a passing game coordinator in Jacksonville. He was a coordinator under Pete Carroll in Seattle, a quarterback for a few years, quarterbacks coach. I mean, this does not move the needle for me at all. It is not at all what the Cowboys needed, but what they think they needed is a puppet for Jerry Jones. So I guess they got what they wanted from there. For me, not what was needed for the Dallas Cowboys, respectability. So there it is. My top 7 as far as coaching hires. I probably ranked Kellen Moore a little bit too low, but I'll keep him there for now because, I don't know, maybe Liam Cohen's exactly what the Jacksonville Jaguars needed. Number 1, the Patriots and Mike Vrabel. Number 2, the Bears and Ben Johnson. Number 3, the Las Vegas Raiders and Pete Carroll. Number 4, the New York Jets and Aaron Glenn. Number 5, the Jaguars and Liam Cohen. And number 6, the Saints and Kellen Moore. And number 7, the Cowboys with Brian Schottenheimer. Those are the my rankings as far as how well each team did on what they need for their next head coach. Yeah, the Saints are in a weird spot, right? They're this team that's always kind of up against the cap, stripping the cap, like pushing all the money down the road. And the reason why I put Moore down, because I keep thinking about it, looking at it, like, did I rank him too low, is I think Kellen Moore's the kind of guy that when you know, like, we're starting over, maybe they are. Maybe they're finally saying, we're just going to start over. But they still have some older guys on the books. They have to figure out what they're doing contract-wise. I think they needed more of a bridge guy there. I have no idea what the Jags need. No idea. So, good luck, Liam Cohen. Maybe he's exactly what they need. Maybe it's going to be a disaster like it has been in Jacksonville with other teams. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back. We'll wrap up your Wednesday Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show after this timeout on WGR. You know, we've gone this whole show today and have not talked about the Bills' reported hiring of a new special teams coordinator. So the Bills, it came out yesterday, have reportedly hired, or are hiring, whatever the process would be here, Chris Tabor as their new special teams coordinator. And what stands out about Chris Tabor to me is this is a guy who has been a coordinator in this league for 13 years. And why that's significant is he's taking over a position that the last two coordinators were both first-timers. You go back to Heath Farwell. Now, when Sean McDermott got the Bills' job in 2017... he had Danny Crossman on staff, and he retained Danny Crossman on staff for a couple of years. And then it was, what, 1 year, 2 year, I can't remember, I have to go back and look. But anyway, then Heath Farwell came in. He hired Heath Farwell away from, he had been a assistant special teams coach in Seattle. Young guy, rising up, and he became a first-time coordinator. Then, and Matthew Smiley had been here, by the way, Matthew Smiley had worked under McDermott as an assistant special teams coach with both Crossman and then Farwell. And then Farwell was let go, obviously, after the 21 season. And Smiley was elevated to the role, becoming another first-time coordinator. So you had Heath Farwell, first-time coordinator. Matthew Smiley, first-time coordinator. Both of them now, they've moved on from. And the new coordinator, Chris Tabor, totally different approach. This is a guy who's been in the NFL for 13 years. Now, he actually wasn't in the NFL last year. But I put together a chart. You can find it at Sal Sports on Twitter/X. And I basically just put together his coverage rankings and his return rankings, coverage, kickoff coverage and return, punt coverage and return, and highlighted, you know, top half of the league, bottom half. And a lot of this is just, it's so randomly impacted, but you can just see. But what's striking to me as you take a look, he started with the Browns in 2011. He was with the Browns for 8 years as a coordinator, 2011 through 2017, and then the Bears for 4 years, and then the Panthers for 2 years before not being a part of an NFL team last year, not coaching last year. So 13 years as a coordinator in the NFL. And the other part of it is he's twice been an interim head coach with the Bears and then with the Panthers in different times. And the reason why that's important is I think that when you surround yourself and you hire people on your staff who've had experience as, if it's a coordinator and then he becomes a position coach for you, but he had coordinator experience, or a head coach comes and coaches anything, a position group, a coordinator, whatever, those people understand the dynamic of the whole team way better than just someone coming up as a position coach. So I'm assuming that's part of the reason why Sean McDermott made this move as well. But the Bills haven't confirmed that, but we'll get that, I'm sure, coming up, and then the Combine in a couple of weeks. In the meantime, Sabres Live up next, and One Bills Live, show up with the Bulldog at 3 o'clock. Have a great rest of your Wednesday. I'll talk to you tomorrow here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show.